Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. It's time for another Letter from Switzerland, in which we try to reflect Swiss life through our own eyes. Today's letter is written and presented by my American-Canadian friend, Aubrey Diem, from his home in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland.
Skiing is no longer a pleasurable sport. What was once a great way to forget the stress of city life has turned into a very dangerous pastime. Every year, more skiers are injured, many of which turn into complicated healing processes. There are many reasons for this turn of events. First, especially the young like to go faster and are often out of control when the time or places call for prudence. Secondly, the skiers are faced with more and more snowboarders who often dominate the piste, which they ruin by carving deep tracks in the off-piste runs that once existed for skiers. Beginners can often snowboard, but cannot control their clumsy and large boards. And as soon as they make some progress, they love to jump like the pros, thus increasing the risk of injury. Thirdly, one skis more and more on man-made snow, which is packed down further by machines. You no longer fall into soft, cushy flakes, but on hard-packed snow and often ice. The result is that more and more skiers use helmets and other protective devices such as back shields. This gives one a false sense of security and allows one to think he or she can go faster. Adding to these problems is the fact that many skiers and boarders do not stop after a collision to see if the other party needs assistance. In fact, the perpetrator often tries to disappear into the crowd. In other words, it's no different than a case of hit and run. Added to this negative scenario has been the rising cost of ski equipment and lift tickets to cover the costs of mechanical grooming, new lifts and cable cars, and snowmaking. Skiing has become a rich man's sport. Pro racing is always a factor in the problem of safety on the slopes, as young skiers try to emulate what they see on the World Cup circuit. As sponsor pressure mounts, there have been numerous injuries to the national teams, both in training and during the season, so that many racers could not take part in the Winter Olympics. Furthermore, meets have turned into media spectacles, where thousands of drunken spectators take part in the festivities, acting more like football hooligans than civilized humans. This season, I saw a slalom race in Austria, where the last skier, an Austrian, who skied in the second run and had a chance to win the race as he had had the best time in the first run, came down the course, twisting through the gates, and then during the last 100 to 150 meters, had to ski through smoke, breathing the noxious stuff and reducing his visibility. This stupid act to let off fireworks that are common in football stadiums was set off by idiots wearing no shirts or jackets in sub-zero weather. The Austrian racer lost the race. Thus, we see that because of the commercialization of the sport, complete with giant balloons advertising the local beers and similar signs on the piste, the skiing that I knew and loved for the past 65 years has been transformed into a winter Disneyland. The Alps of Switzerland and Europe, with their sublime mountains, have been turned into the crass billboards of the world. One way to avoid this depressing atmosphere is to take up cross-country skiing. The sport is much cheaper and far better for your health and safety.
Thank you. In most of Europe, including Switzerland, wine is not considered an alcoholic beverage, but rather a food. This is why the making of wine in Switzerland is controlled by the Swiss food laws. In every bottle of wine, there are natural yeasts, along with trace minerals and vitamins, which are not always found in other forms of food. That's why in many countries, poor peasants still thrive on a diet of bread, cheese, and wine. Contrary to popular belief, many experts state that wine does not lead to alcoholism. Rather, most alcoholism results from excessive consumption of hard spirits. Through long experience and research, it has been established that in Europe, the best wines are produced between the 30th and 50th parallels. This puts Switzerland almost in the middle of that band. Switzerland's largest wine-producing area is the Canton of Valais on the sunny south side of the Bernese Alps. In Valais' terraced vineyards, several varieties of wine grapes grow up to eventually produce at least 10 recognized wines, among them the famous white wines, Fendant, made from the Chasselas grape, the Johannisberger, made from the Riesling and Silvaner grapes, and the red wine called Dole, which can be made from either the Pinot Noir or Gamay grapes, or a blend of both. By the way, the Gamay and Pinot Noir grapes are also used to make some of the best French Burgundy wines. In Sion, the seat of the Valais cantonal government and also Valais' capital of wine, you'll find Provins, one of Valais' and Switzerland's largest wine-producing firms. To find out more about the production and quality of Valais wines, I spoke with Provins' Leo Carlin.
Mr. Carlin, what makes Canton Valais Switzerland's best wine-growing area?
We have a lot of sunshine. We have the most sunshine of Switzerland. And the soil is very good as well. And of course, we have made a selection of wines, of grapes, if you want, which correspond best to our soil.
How can you tell before a wine grape is planted if that particular wine grape is going to grow well in that given piece of soil?
That's a question of experience. We know exactly that our best Pinot Noirs are coming from the area of Sierre. We know exactly that our best Fendants are coming from the center of the Valais, from Sion and the villages near Sion. We know, for example, that the best Johannisberg is coming from Chamozon.
Mr. Carlin, in France, the so-called appellation contrôlée laws assure that only wine grapes especially suited to a particular piece of land will be grown there. Is there such a system in Switzerland?
For the case of Switzerland, we have the Swiss food law. And inside of this Swiss law, you have the different cantons. They can be much stronger for their own wines. And that's, for example, the case of the Canton de Valais for the Dole. Dole is not a grape. Dole is not a wine. Dole is an appellation of quality from the Valais. And you will see something of similar between the Appellation Contrôlée in France and the Dole in the Valais for our red wines.
We hear very much from French wines that there are very good and very bad years, but I believe the Swiss wines, especially in the Canton of Valais, are generally consistently good.
You are right. We have better years and years. The sugar content is a little bit slower, but we don't have really years where we must say it's disastrous.
Disastrous.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the big chance. That's a question of sun. That's a question of our climate we have.
Switzerland is known for its dry white wines, especially the Canton of Valais. Well, why are most of the Swiss wines dry and not sweet?
The Swiss consumer likes dry wines. And if we take the Fendant, for example, who has had at the harvest 80, 82, 83... grams per liter of sugar. This sugar is transformed in alcohol that gives you about 12 degrees of alcohol. You could stop the fermentation before to have 10% of alcohol and to let the rest of sugar, and that would give you a sweet wine.
So in other words, Mr. Carlin, you let the fermentation process continue in its natural state so that most of the natural sugars are converted into alcohol so that there's not a lot of natural sweetness left in the wine.
Yes, that's the reason, you know.
After all the care and all the work in the vineyard, the grapes are crushed and the juice is placed in casks for months of fermentation and aging. Afterward, the finished wine comes here. You're listening to the bottling of new fondant, Valais' famous dry white wine. Of course, the true test of any wine is in the drinking. And what could be better than a bottle of fondant and raclette, the popular cheese dish of Canton Valais? Raclette is fresh, hot, melted country cheese served on a plate along with potatoes, onions, and pickles. As Mr. Carlin and I enjoyed both the wine and the raclette in a rustic Valaisan restaurant, I asked him how much wine the average citizen of Valais drinks.
Now, the Swiss people per head of the population in a year drinks about 40 liters. But as we are the typical wine country in Switzerland, I think it's much more in the Valais. And in the Valais, we drink the wine, and especially the fondant, the dry wine, at every occasion, you know. You can't make a contract with somebody without drinking a fondant, for example, or a Johannisberg. And I think you start already in the morning at about 11 o'clock, half past 11, to have your aperitif. And an aperitif in the Valais, if you say to your friend, come on, let's go to have an aperitif, you think we are going to drink 2 or 3 deci of fondant. And I think during the meal, the Valaisan drinks wine as well, and there they drink especially red wine. But the biggest part of wine is drank between the meals and not during the meals in the Valais.
The happy wines and people of Canton Valais, Switzerland's largest wine-producing area. Farther west, on the frontier between France and Switzerland, in the canton of Geneva, the sun and soil are similar to Valais. You might think of Geneva as just an international diplomatic city, but its canton, which is tiny in size compared with Valais, happens to be Switzerland's third largest producer, after Canton Vaud and Valais, which is in first place. Even though Geneva's climate resembles that of Valais, there's enough difference to produce a host of Geneva wines with their own character. In the red wine classification, Geneva produces Gamay, a grape which is also used in Valais. And a good Geneva Gamay can hold its own against the same wine from Valais. At Expo Vina, the Swiss Autumn Wine Exhibition, I talked in Geneva with one of the organizers, Mr. Jean-Pierre Chad, and I also had a chance to sample a glass of Geneva Gamay.
Smells delicious. Let's taste that. Yes, it's a very smooth wine. Very smooth indeed.
You know, till the last war, we had only, not quite, but mostly white wines in Geneva. And they discovered, just after the war, that the Gamay could be a very, very good red wine. So now we are making more Gamay as white wines.
Most of the Swiss white wines that are very well known abroad and certainly within Switzerland tend to be what are called the dry wines, not very sweet. Is that the character of the Geneva white wines too?
Quite. They are only dry wines, or fast only dry wines. And I may say something more. Last year, in Geneva, we have produced more than 10 million bottles of wine, all sorts of wines.
Well, Mr. Chard, we've talked about the white wines now. We've tried the rather delicious Geneva Gamay, the red wine. But could you recommend a typical Geneva white wine that we could try?
Oh, yes, I could. We could try Perle du Mondement.
Well, let's now try a little bit of this Perle du Mondement. And it has a very delightful, refreshing taste.
Yes.
It reminds me perhaps a bit of the Montibeur, the wine of Valle. It's very dry, but it has an interesting taste to it. It isn't typical of the Fondant, for example. It has its own character entirely.
Quite a different character, yes.
What sort of soil do you have here around Geneva?
Chalky. Mm-hmm. Chalky soil.
Well, this would be very good, I think, for the Chasselas grape, which is the basis of the white wine.
It suits those wines.
Thank you very much.
No lover of Swiss wines could ever forget to mention Neuchâtel, probably the most exported of all Swiss wines. The vineyards of the town of Neuchâtel lie overlooking the beautiful long lake of the same name, not very far from Bern, the Swiss federal capital. Neuchâtel also claims to have invented cheese fondue, what could almost be called the Swiss national dish, but this is debatable. Nevertheless, there is no better fondue made than one made with Neuchâtel white wine, a prime ingredient. Beside the plentiful aromatic Neuchâtel white wine, there are a couple of excellent Neuchâtel reds, the most outstanding of which is called œil de perdrix in French, or in English, eye of the partridge. At Semmelschattenay, a leading Neuchâtel wine producer, I talked with Mr. Jean-Claude von Buren and also tasted some of that eye of the partridge.
Ah, well, the first thing we notice is that this eye of the partridge seems to be a bit darker than a rosé. It's not as light as a rosé, but it's not quite a full-bodied red. And I think the real test comes when I taste it, if I can excuse myself and wish you bon santé.
Bon santé.
Bon santé. Let's taste some of this eye of the partridge red. And the amazing thing that I find, and this is the first time I've had eye of the partridge from Neuchâtel, that even though the color is not very dark red, it's just a little darker than a rosé, the taste of the wine could be compared to a rather, what we could describe as a heavy, a rather full-bodied red wine. How important is the color in connection with the taste of a red wine?
The color is a principle of œil de perdrix, that is staying on only 12 to 24 hours. And the skin of the grapes are giving the colors. And if you stay only 12 to 24 hours, you got a color very pale. Instead of having a red, we're staying about eight days.
Well, if it's the skin of the wine grapes which give a wine its color, would it be theoretically possible, for example, to remove the skins of a red wine grape and make a wine which has the taste and the body of a red wine but could be completely white?
We do it. In Neuchâtel, there is a specialty called, in French, blanc de noir. It's a red grape pressed at once, and the juice which is going out is very, very pale in red. The color is white after 3 months. Then it's a white wine with the characteristic of a red wine and a special taste, of course.
But when it comes to local drinking habits, do people drink more of the white than they do the red, or is there equal distribution in consumption?
Normally people drink white very often. If I could give some proportion, less than one quarter of the production is red wine.
Well, when a person buys a bottle of Neuchâtel wine, the question is, how long should he keep it? Do Neuchâtel wines improve with age, like some of the French wines?
3 weeks after the in-bottling or the travel, white wine of Neuchâtel can be drunk without any problem. For red wine, I would say that 1 or 2 years after the in-bottling would be better.
Thank you, Mr. von Buren, for giving us the background on Neuchâtel wines. I think what I'd like to do now, if with your permission, is to go down to your cellars and see some of the new Neuchâtel wines in the aging process. Well, Mr. von Buren, now we are in the lovely cellars here in Châtenay, Neuchâtel, and we have all the traditional wooden casks holding many thousands of liters of wine. Well, right here before us, we have a huge, what we could describe as a wall, containing 5,920 liters of what kind of wine?
Neuchâtel white wine, but it's a new white wine, of course.
And this is the wine which we're just going to test here to find out how it's coming along. And we're just going to tap the barrel. And we'll take a little bit out. And as I smell it,
There is definitely wine there. It's just the first fermentation. But you can smell something. But there's something very fruity about it too. Now the important thing is to just give it a taste. We hear a lot of lip smacking going on, and this is not being rude. It's actually part of the tasting. Why is that? That you like to twirl the wine around your tongue and smack your lips. So what is that for?
You must bring some air. You must add some air in the tasting for having the really real taste.
In terms of the standard 7 deciliter bottles of wine, roughly about 27-28 ounces, how many of these bottles could you produce from all of this wine that you have here and in the other winery?
115,000 bottles and about 100,000 liters.
And this represents, in terms of the white wine, your output for 1 year?
Yes, about our output for 1 year.
Mr. Van Buren, we've now moved over into a cellar of a rather different kind. This is the Mouzeur wine cellar, in other words, the sparkling wine cellar. But there is a great similarity to the sparkling wine and the French champagne.
Of course. The wine is the same as in France, only it's not coming from direct champagne because champagne people are not selling wine, or it's coming too expensive for us. But the wine is coming from France near champagne, and it's in bottling and making as champagne. Only you cannot put on the labeling champagne, and therefore you put it sparkling wine, or in French, mousseux.
Why is champagne or sparkling wine generally more expensive than most other sorts of wines?
Because first, you have two fermentation in bottles. You must have some liquor for making your champagne, and he had for this fermentation the champagne or the sparkling wine, if you want, had to be laying down very long, about 2, 3, or 4 years. It depends. Then these 4 years, a lot of work, make the cost of the bottles of. Course.
You mentioned liqueur or liquor that you put into the champagne. What do you mean by that? Is this some sort of an additive?
The first liqueur, first when you got your French wine, white wine for making champagneization, you add some liqueur for making a fermentation, a first fermentation.
What is in that liqueur?
Basis, cognac, and white wine and a lot of sugar.
And this helps the flavor and the fermentation process of the champagne-type wines.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then the basic wine is always the same, but only the liquor adding at the end are making a dry or an extra dry or a mi-sec or a brut.
Of course, after you age these individual bottles of sparkling wine, or for the sake of a better word, we can call the champagne-type wines, they go into the bottling room, and there I think we have something very interesting to see. Well now, Mr. Van Buren, we've come into the room where these individual bottles of aging sparkling wine have been brought out from the cellars and are ready to be bottled.
Yes. The bottles are just coming. They have a work cork. We take the cork away and adding the liquor.
Well, let's move over now to the corking machine. And there's something very interesting. When you look at what we call a champagne cork, you very often have the feeling that the cork is actually what we would call mushroom-shaped. But I have a sample of one of the corks here, and it's just a very big, fat cork, and it's perfectly cylindrical. There's no mushroom shape.
Right.
How do you get the mushroom shape in the cork?
The machine is pressing the cork until he has the form of a mushroom, and the caps in metal is making this typical form of champagne cork as a mushroom.
Mr. Van Buren, why is this mushroom-shaped cork so important to the sparkling wine?
The mushroom corks is important because the cork is biggest and is containing the big pressure who is staying in the bottle.
So it's more or less expanding. It makes a pressure seal then.
Yes.
Thank you. Up till now, we've been talking about the Swiss wines of French-speaking, or what's called Western Switzerland.
But to the east and to the north, the German-speaking part of Switzerland, there's a number of white or rosé wines to be found as well. Names like Schinznacher, Mayenfelder, Reischling, Tokayer, and Gewürztraminer. But the peculiar thing is that these eastern Swiss wines tend to be rather isolated and are rarely sent to other parts of Switzerland. In Bern, I asked Mr. Fritz Brücker, a local wine merchant, why the eastern Swiss wines are not very well known outside their local areas. Could it be a question of quality?
In general, the wines of the west part of Switzerland are better than the wines of the eastern part of Switzerland, because the eastern wines are more acid than the west wines.
One expert's opinion on eastern Swiss wines. According to Mr. Brücker, it's the old story, sun and proper soil, which eastern Switzerland just doesn't seem to have enough of to produce outstanding wine, at least for the type of grapes they're growing today. But a lot of that eastern Swiss wine can be very pleasant to drink. On the other hand, what about those excellent western Swiss wines we've heard about? Could they stand up against, let's say, a French Beaujolais, a Chablis, or a Mâcon?
I think so, yes. Especially the Dole or a Pinot Noir can be compared with a good French wine. For example, a Beaujolais. Not years ago, perhaps, but now, yes.
Things have improved. What about the white wines, the dry white wines of Switzerland? Can they actually be compared to French white wines?
Also, yes.
Nice compliments to the Swiss winemaker. But wine is a personal experience. If you ever get your hands on a bottle of Swiss wine, you can judge for yourself, preferably with Swiss food. We're nearing the end of our Swiss wine tour, but there's a lot more that could have been said. We could have mentioned the red Merlot of sunny Canton Ticino, the Chafisseur of Bern and the city-owned vineyard. There's Féchy in Mont from Canton Vaud, and Twaner in Pinot Gris. But just the fact that there are so many different kinds of Swiss wine goes to show that Switzerland really is a wine-producing and wine-loving country. And most of all, that when it comes to wine, Switzerland is more than just a blank on the map of Europe.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.